Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We discuss birds today, as we do once a month or so. Rich Guthrie is here to answer your questions about them. A veteran birder, a former NCON specialist and compiler at one time of the Catskill, New York Christmas bird count for the National Audubon Society, Rich is our resident avian expert. The number to call is 800-348-2551. That's 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment on the Vox Pop page of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. Check in on Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. Always nice to get calls, however, on this call-in program. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Hello, Rich. Welcome back.
Hey, Ray. Good to be here.
Oh, it's a beautiful day today.
Indeed.
Beautiful day to go look at the birds.
That's exactly right. Today's the start of a whole new season, a whole new opportunity to get out there and learn and enjoy.
And there are many, many activities for birders now.
As appropriate for the spring season, we have lots of clubs that are offering programs for both beginning and experienced birders. Mm-hmm. As the leaves emerge, now's the time to get out there and learn what's going on and enjoy the activities.
So what do we have here on the list?
Well, a couple of good ones. For example, on the there's a spring birding series that the New York Audubon New York is starting up on the 16th. That's going to be for six Wednesday mornings. Meet up there. You can check that out at audubonnewyork.org.
All right.
That's down by Catskill, New York, where they'll walk around the Ramshorn Preserve, the Ramshorn Creek Preserve.
Okay.
And then the Hudson River Audubon Society will be having a field trip also. That will be on the 19th, Saturday the 19th, going to Piermont Pier and Hook Mountain.
Okay.
For bird migration watching. And then on the 22nd of April, the Green Land Trust will be doing a citizen science workshop. That'll be on Earth Day, Tuesday, April 22nd. And you can check that out at greenlandtrust.org. And that's green with the extra E at the end.
Now, you don't need experience to do these?
Oh, no. That's what it's about, is beginning and learning, starting out. And also on May 3rd, the Greenland Trust, again, is sponsoring a bird walk at the Grassland Preserves down by Coxsackie, New York. That'll begin at 7:30 in the morning. And then through the day, the Albany Pine Bush will be sponsoring a migration celebration at the Albany Pine Bush in Albany, New York.
So there's plenty to do.
On both of those events, I'll be there leading a bird walk in the morning and doing a bird presentation at noon at the Albany Pine Bush.
Great.
So, and one other thing is that I want to mention on the 13th, this coming Sunday, the Saratoga Film Festival. I'll be part of a panel. We'll be discussing the documentary film Emptying the Skies. And that's all about bird activity that's going on in Europe. Unfortunately, it's in the negative activity going on over there where they hunt the birds in the wild. And what it's doing to the bird populations, the migratory birds in and around Europe. This is what's going on in the Mediterranean countries. And we want to shed a light on that because it is devastating to the bird populations. And the film will document the effects of that. And also a panel of experts. I'll be there as well.
Hey, now, don't be so modest.
Okay, I'll be there as well. Right. And we'll be discussing the film, the message, and the impacts, and taking on questions. That's the Saratoga Film Festival. That will be at 320 Broadway, 7:30 on Sunday evening.
All right, and if anybody needs more information on any of this, how do they get in touch with you?
That's easy. You can email me quite easily. I'm Richard P. Guthrie @gmail.com.
All right, then. All right, we have a full roster of calls awaiting you, Rich. Let's take one from email. Bonnie has a question about bluebird houses. How close to each other can they be? That's what
Bonnie
asks.
That's a good question, and it's excellent timing because now's the time to either put them up or, if you have them there, to clean them out, to evict those overwintering mice that might be in there, or the hornet's nest that was there last summer. Now you can go in there and safely clean them out, make them ready for the new bluebirds.
Okay.
A few feet apart will be okay for a bluebird nest box. And the reason I say that's so close is that one may be occupied by the bluebirds, and the other one will be occupied by the tree swallows. And those two species will get along fine together. And they will also prevent rival birds from coming in and taking over the nest box.
So, all right, so 3 or 4 feet.
3 or 4 feet. And if it's strictly bluebirds, then I'd say 30 feet to, let's say, 70 feet apart.
Okay, great. Let's go to Nancy in Belchertown. Hi, Nancy, you're up.
Hello. I am a person who loves birds and wants to know what they are when I see them. I come in the house and I forget what I was going to do. So I just got done reading about an app that helps you identify the birds you're looking at. And it says it's easy because you just put in a few of the bird's key attributes. And it narrows it down to where it's usable. The name of it is iBirdLite. L-I-T.
Have you heard about this one, Rich?
I certainly have, and I highly endorse it. There's that one and the iBird Pro. Both of those are apps that are available. And another one would be, let me see, I can't read the writing on this.
Okay, all right.
But yes, you are correct, Nancy. The iBird Pro,
iBird Lite. Beak. Feathers, and then it'll tell you what you're looking at.
Go from there, yes.
Yeah.
A little more information will be necessary.
All right, fair enough. Well, Nancy, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Jody in East Lee, Mass. You're up.
Hi there.
Hello.
I'm really excited to be talking to you. I've never done this before.
Nice to have you here.
Well, welcome.
Hi, Rich. I was talking to my friend Roy the other day, and I said I was going to call in and ask Rich, can you imitate the call of a red-winged blackbird?
Oh, I love this. Oh. Thank you for this, Jody. I'm going to sit back and relax.
What a setup. Well, this will open your eyes in a big hurry, right?
All right.
Well, the red-winged blackbird, I like to think of as a bird that speaks two languages. It says in English, it says conqueree. And in Italian, it says the word for Wednesday, mercoledì.
Ah, okay.
Mercoledì.
All right, can we hear it?
Yeah, conqueree. I'm sorry. It has a musical sound to it.
That's the best you can do?
That's about when it comes to red-winged blackbirds. When it comes to red-winged blackbirds, I leave it up to the experts, and that would be them.
I figured that it's almost a sound unreproducible by the human throat.
Can you give it a shot, Jody?
Yeah, well, see what you can
do. No, not me.
Oh, well, there you go. See that?
All right.
You know what I was going to say to that lady, too? I tried the iBird Lite, and it's limited in its scope, but you can put a shortcut to a website all about birds.
Mm-hmm.
It's got video, calls, everything.
Nice.
You can see it on an iPhone.
All about birds.
All about
all
birds.
All about birds.
Jody,
thanks, Jody.
I'm going to take that advice, and I'm going to plug that in as well.
Try it.
We appreciate the call.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you very much.
Bye now. Let's go to Rick in Brunswick. Hiya, Rick.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. You're up.
Okay. I have a question about bird identification. It's a hawk. Never seen one like it. I'm sure it's migratory. He is out here over the farmland, and it is in an unusually white underbelly and slightly darker, I think, on top. Has elongated wings, say, unlike a red tail. And the outermost third of its wings are totally black.
Okay. And I'm going to suggest maybe that this bird was flying out over a field across from your house.
That's right, fields with woods close by.
Yes, okay. Well, I'm going to say that what you were seeing was a male northern harrier. The northern harrier used to be, back in my day, was the marsh hawk. And they get their name because they do fly back and forth over the fields, coursing back and forth, and occasionally dipping down to grab a mouse in the tall grass. And the northern harrier is the male goes by the name, by some colloquial name, as the gray ghost.
Ah.
So
right. It is migratory. I've never seen one around here.
Well, they used to nest in this area, but habitat change and pressure from other uses have driven them more or less to find more remote areas, mainly to the north of us. But you're right, they are migratory. And I might mention that now is the time when the floodgates for migratory hawks open up.
Oh, really?
Ah.
Oh, I know. Yeah. That's why we need to have you on the program more than once at this time here, more than once a month.
Well,
are you his agent?
Well, Rick, we try. I try to, but I'm going to suggest that hawk watching in the area is about ready to hit the peak, and there are
how many different types will we see?
Well, the types will be probably 15 or 20 on a real good day.
Yeah.
You could see, if you go to some of these prime hawk watching sites, you could see all the expected hawks and then some of the really rare ones that come through. And the more spectacular thing is the numbers of them. On a good day, today, I suspect, is going to be a good day at some of these sites where you may see thousands of hawks going overhead.
And there's a close site around here.
Well, there is one in Massachusetts over by Holyoke, Mount Tom Reservation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's a place on top of a mountain with a tremendous view. Then also in the Massachusetts area, in Pittsfield area, is Monument Mountain. In the New York area, downstate by Rockland County, is Hook Mountain. And I might mention that the Hudson River Audubon Society will be doing a field trip to Hook Mountain on Saturday the 19th.
Huh.
And you can look up their website on the internet. And then one more is the premier site in the Northeast and around the country is Derby Hill near Oswego, New York.
Okay.
And the Syracuse or the Onondaga Audubon Society website will have information about Derby Hill. And they're... we'll welcome newcomers to watch the hawks go by the thousands.
Fantastic. Well, it's hawk time, and it's also break time. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is here. More on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from Barry Price Architecture. Since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics, BarryPriceArchitecture.com. The Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Ave in Albany. Offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more, honestweight.coop. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com. And Union Graduate College, offering an MBA in healthcare management, now online, the power of an MBA, the passion of healthcare, uniongraduatecollege.edu.
Zach, can we just play Sonny Rollins for the rest of the show? Yeah, would that be all right, just underneath? That'd be swell. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Let's take a wistful trip down memory lane, Rich. Remember that email question we took about how close the bluebird houses could be?
Here we go. Go ahead.
Well, there's a follow-up from Bonnie who says, sorry, I meant how many boxes can I have total? 4, 10, 40? Signed, Bonnie.
The answer is yes, of course.
As many as you want?
Of course. If you got the space and the habitat, go for it. I know people that have 20 nest boxes out. And what's also a good idea, if you have neighbors that are willing, Dutchess County, the Waterman Bird Club in Dutchess County, New York, has established bluebird nest box trails.
Oh.
Where they'll set up a whole series that the volunteers will monitor as the season goes on.
Yeah.
And in fact, Jen Bloomfield will be on our panel on Sunday up at Saratoga Springs. And she's the president of the New York Bluebird Society. So.
Oh, well, nice. All right. Now, Bonnie, rather than writing a third follow-up, why don't you email Rich directly if you have another question. And that email address once again, Rich.
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
All right. That's a big 10-4. Let's move on. 800-348-2551. Dana in Schenectady. Dana, you're on.
Hi. So I have a lot of wildflowers in my yard. I'm actually looking at them right now. And they're mostly coneflowers, the purple coneflowers. And I keep them up so that the birds have food over the winter. And it's right about this time of year when I'm looking forward to cleaning up the yard. But I don't want to leave them stranded without you know, sort of a food bridge as it is, as it were. But so I'm wondering, like, what time of the year would you recommend doing that cleanup? Would they still have, you know, plenty of food and they can move on to something else?
Well, now's not a bad time to do that. You know, just tidying up the yard and garden and starting out with a new crop. And then what you can do is set aside the seed heads that may still have some viable seeds in them. Set them aside and let the birds, the ground feeders, find them themselves. I see no reason why now would not be a good time to go ahead, clean it up, and I recommend backyard gardens as a food source for many different bird species, from the seed-eating birds to the nectar-eating birds, such as the hummingbirds. Of course, they provide some nest material, such as the milkweed will provide that, and, of course, help the monarch butterfly, which is having some troubles, too. So, yeah, I'd say go for it and enjoy the good weather and have fun in the garden watching the birds.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I have all of those. I keep the milkweed around. I've got some dogwoods. I've got some honeysuckle. And when I go to buy plants, I specifically, you know, look for ones that are bird friendly.
And native, yep. Species as well.
And native, yes. Thank
yes.
you.
That's yep. a, it's always okay. a thank you very much.
Yeah,
Dana.
Thanks, Dana. We appreciate the call. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest today. Douglas in Albany. Douglas, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering about mallards and crossbreeding with other wild species. It seems that they crossbreed with a number of different species. And I'm just sort of wondering if you have any knowledge about how many different species they can and generally do or often do crossbreed with.
Not that many, after all. In the wild population, crossbreeding is a rarity. Mallards, mm-hmm. because there are so many mallards around, the opportunity is more available for them. And the most frequent bird species or duck species they will breed with will be the black duck here in the Northeast. And the offspring will have attributes that are identifiable to either the two parent types. There are some other strange combinations, such as with the pintail, that might also be found. Now, in avian culture societies, that these are the people that keep waterfowl for pets, there seems to be a drive amongst some of them to see who can come up with the most bizarre type of crossbreed.
Yeah, that's
yes. Well, you
that's
get
odd.
Totally. It is, and unfortunately, sometimes these little critters will get out and throw a real question mark into the bird-watching society. That's
Franken-mallard.
Franken-mallard, yes.
Oh, boy, okay.
So,
well, Douglas, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Here's one from email, Rich. Scott asks, how soon until the hummingbirds come back? When do I put out the feeders?
Well, you can hold off on that for a little while.
Yeah.
But only for a few weeks, because around May 1st is considered a good time here in the Northeast. They've already made their crossing. You know, many of our bird species winter in the tropics and the Caribbean islands and the Central America, and they're beginning their journey north now. So, folks,
how does a little bird go that far?
Incredible! It's one of the magics of nature out there. Truly phenomenal that these little birds can travel this distance. And the hummingbirds will be back here around the first week of May. So putting them out on the 1st of May can't hurt.
All right, that's a good plan, and it's on the way. Let's go to Mary in Rhinebeck. Mary.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Last year, you had suggested, I wanted to attract cardinals, and you suggested that I put out black, can't remember what the seed is.
Sunflower seed.
Yes. And that did it.
Oh, good.
It was great. And this year, I thought, let me just experiment with thistle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put it out, and nothing. Nobody's coming around. And I wondered, what am I doing wrong, or what does that mean?
Well, most birds don't like black thistle seed.
Really?
There are a few, and those that do love it. So if you have goldfinches or siskins around, you'll be their best friend while you put out black thistle seed.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Sounds like I should maybe go back to the the black sunflower.
Oh, by all means, yeah, black sunflower seed and also crack corn. It's a nice, inexpensive, and highly desirable alternative that the blue jays and mourning doves and many of the sparrows, even the cardinals, will like.
And do you suggest throwing that out, like maybe just on a table outside and then having them come? Would they also do that?
Yes.
Besides cedar?
That's the preferred way with the crack corn.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. 1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. So most birds don't like black thistle. Is there a list of foods available that, you know, say you want to attract a certain bird, and can you get a specific food that most birds don't like, but this bird really likes?
There is. If you go to the Cornell University website, the Lab of Ornithology, mm-hmm. you'll find a bird feeder-friendly informational website there. And in fact, you can get involved with one of their popular projects, and that's called Project Feeder Watch. Although the season is winding down for that activity, because that's mainly a cold weather.
Okay, and what
season.
Is Project Feeder Watch?
We're citizen scientists, and this you can learn about if you come down to the Audubon New York activity mm-hmm. on the what was that? That was going to be the 22nd Earth Day.
Okay, of April.
Of April. Well, you'll learn about how people will input their data to Cornell University, and where it's compiled nationwide and, in fact, expanding over the borders. So we'll have a global vision of bird feeder activity, and you're part of a party.
Terrific. Let's go to Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Hi, Lynn. You're on.
Hi, Rich, and I'm so glad you took my call. Okay. Oh, my gosh. I don't like using the computer because
okay
awesome. Well, you're on the phone, so we're working out fine.
Okay.
Yep, we're with
okay.
you.
Great. I'm breeding mealworms. They're very easy.
Oh, good.
How do I track buntings or wrens? I've been over my owls this year.
Well, buntings, indigo bunting is that brilliant blue bird that's on its way back from the tropics as we speak. They'll be back here at the end of April. And curious thing about indigo buntings is that they will visit a bird feeder many times only when they first arrive into the area. And
yeah.
Then they'll disperse into the woods where they'll have a happy spring and summer and then return to the south for the winter. But
yeah.
It's a curious thing. They seem to show up at bird feeders and then disperse. They're not like some of the other birds that will stick around and make everybody happy with their company. And the bird seed to put out for them will be millet or safflower. The white millet seed is one of their preferred, and many other birds will like that as well, so you can't go wrong with that.
That's good. Spring mealworms is easy. Red-winged blackbird. I got a little toy here.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk to my parents, I say, guanka.
Was that you doing that? No.
What was that?
I wish. That was a toy.
Oh.
Right. One of those little squeeze toys that make the sound of the birds. Yes. Okay.
Oh, terrific.
Well,
did it sound okay over there?
It sounded okay. The Italian was a little different accent.
All right,
Mercola
that's fine. Thanks, Lynn.
Rose-breasted grosbeaks. I had a couple pair last winter, I thought. And they're not here yet, but I hope they will return. What do they like?
Which one is that again?
Rose-breasted grosbeak.
Oh, okay. Well, they're like the sunflower seed, just like the cardinals.
Okay.
The black oil sunflower seeds.
How about wrens?
Wrens.
I saw a wren here this year, but I've never seen one before.
Okay, well, they like either suet or the mealworms that you're putting together there.
Good.
All right. Lynn, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
1-800-348-2551 is our number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Alice in Munson, you're on. Hi, Alice.
Hi. This is a great show. I love the bird shows.
Thank you.
What I wanted to say is I belong to a volunteer group in Auburn, Massachusetts, that does migratory bird banding.
Mm-hmm.
And we record and band the birds that are coming up from South America.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I think is really important to put out there is people who have cats should really keep their cats indoors, because in addition to all the other obstacles that the birds are facing in their migration up from South America, one of the biggest obstacles that they face is these cats that are outside. So if you really love your cats, keep them safe and keep them inside for the sake of the cat and for the sake of all the beautiful songbirds that we're losing.
Well, you speak not only for yourself, Alice, but I join you in that admonition. And I also will add that it is good for the cats, too. I mean, it's a jungle out there, and domestic cats are not well suited for coping with the wilds. I mean, they seem to be content. You know, as cats are, they never really reveal what's going on inside their head. And although they appear to like to go outside, it is really hazardous for a cat to be outside these days. And the most incredible thing was this revelation that there's this tapeworm that's going around that that cats seem to be ingesting and harboring, these huge tapeworms.
Wow.
That's not healthy for the cat, reduces their stamina and their immunization. And also, you know, the world of predators and diseases and nasty other cats and stuff. So
the traffic. Good thing,
if you love your cat, keep your cat indoors. And also the birds will appreciate it, too.
Right.
You can love them, too.
You can keep the birds indoors, though, couldn't you?
Well, you not to recommend it.
If anybody can find a group where you can volunteer your time to do bird banding, it's a wonderful activity, and it really gives you a whole new respect for not just the environment, but for the amazing feat that these birds do twice a year, traveling several thousand miles when they maybe weigh a couple of ounces.
Yeah.
Well, I've been a bird bander for some 35 years now, and I can echo that. And one thing I might mention is that one of the goals I have upcoming hopefully this year is a trip down to Cuba, of all places.
Oh, really?
To have a look at the where our birds spend the winter. And this will be a people-to-people type program that I'm working on putting together. And I invite anybody out there who might be interested and joining me down there. Again, this is all under the auspices and permission of the U.S. State Department.
Right.
So it's totally permitted if we can get the, connect the connections.
Right.
And again,
my place handles that very frequently.
Terrific. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. Alice, thank you very much for the call. You going to bring cigars back?
No.
All right, good. That's the number one answer when you're filling out the form.
Yes. No
cigar. I will not bring cigars back. State Department. Let's go over to Ralph in Montague, Mass. Ralph, you're up.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Am I on?
Yes. We are.
Hi. This is the first bird show I've heard of because of my work. But there was a question I wanted to ask you from last summer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting more and more hummingbird moths, and I've always had hummingbirds.
Okay.
I've lived in this place. But I noticed last summer a couple of times, whenever another hummingbird comes in, you know, the hummingbirds get aggressive and drive them away. And I was watching this hummingbird moth feeding last summer, and the hummingbird came around the corner of the plant like it was going to drive it away, and it just stopped in midair and beat a beeline back around the bush again, almost as if it was. And I saw that happen a couple of times, like they were almost afraid of the hummingbird moth. Are the moths aggressive to the hummingbirds?
Not at all.
Do you know?
Not at all. They should get along fine. So maybe it was a case of mistaken identification.
Yeah.
He thought it was another hummingbird.
Well, that's what I thought, and I thought, maybe they were afraid of it as well.
Fear okay. Should not have been a factor in there. Now, the hummingbird moth is an incredible little insect.
Oh, yeah, it is.
It looks and acts like a hummingbird.
It's not little, by the way.
Oh, no, they're not little.
Yeah, as moths go, pretty big.
Yeah.
If you get one in your house, it's pretty big.
But they are the one of the popular ones comes from the tomato hornworm. It's a sphinx moth, and there's a lot of different varieties of them out there.
Yeah.
And I congratulate you for, number one, identifying and appreciating them, and then also sharing that encounter with the real hummingbirds.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fascinating to watch, and I saw it several times. It was interesting.
Well, good.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Well, I hope you could get a video of it. That would be fun to watch.
Well, maybe I'll try that this summer.
There you go, Ralph. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We had one in our house one time.
Well, why?
It just got in.
Oh,
it came in the screen door one night. I was out taking the air, and it came in, and Took a long time to get that thing out of the house.
Well, did you try the red-winged blackbird imitation?
No, I don't have the toy.
No. Just your own vocalization interpretation of the red-winged blackbird song.
We'll get the.
Try it. I can't hurt.
Hummingbird moth out of the house.
It can't hurt.
Hang on. This is breaking news. Let's go to Ryan in Albany. Ryan, you're up.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So I first got into birds after watching David Attenborough's The Life of Birds, and I've been kind of intrigued ever since then about how different ways I could try to make my backyard in Center Square, Albany, more habitable for birds. I was wondering if there's like certain birdhouses I could put up or certain food out or just doing anything would help. I'm not really sure.
Okay. Well, birdhouses do work.
Even in urban environments.
Oh, absolutely. The one thing you want to do is, the number one bird you may attract in a city such as Albany or Pittsfield would be the house sparrow. They'll find a nest box with a hole in it and make themselves right at home. But there are some measures that you can take to discourage them, where you may get 70% success. But there are a couple of good websites that you can check out. And one of them I might recommend would be the North American Bluebird Society or the New York Bluebird Society, for one.
Okay.
And then also the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the government agency that will have some very useful information about nest boxes and also bird identification.
All right.
Yeah. Do they usually say, like, the best size for a nest box?
Or? Yes, they do. They'll give you the dimensions and some of the tricks, such as for a owl nest box, which, by the way, in Albany might work very well. I know we have populations of screech owls in Albany, and one of the tricks with them is to line the bottom with some pine needle branches, just twigs.
Yeah.
A little furniture in the house, make them more at home.
All right, Ryan, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. More birds coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Nahanyan Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HanyanBakery.com. Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts. Providing printing design for customers for over 20 years, from digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more. ParadiseCopies.com. HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting Boeing Boeing by Mark Camaletti, weekends April 18th through May 4th in the Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. And Eagle Hill School, Hardwick, Massachusetts, a college prep boarding and day school for students in grades 8 through 12 with learning disabilities, dyslexia, ADD, and ADHD, EHS1.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is here, boys and girls. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And let's see, whose turn is it here? It would be Tom in Albany. Tom, you're up.
Yes, hi. My question is, you mentioned birds feeders season was going to be coming to an end, and my wife and I feed the birds all winter. I'm wondering, at what point should I stop stocking my feeder so that the birds can feed naturally?
Well, I say you don't even have to bother. You can keep feeding the birds through the summer season. They will continue to come to a feeder. It'll be a different mix, and that's part of the fun of it. You might get the rose-breasted grosbeaks or orioles or the house wren or different summering birds that will come to your bird feeder. There's no reason to stop. The one caution I would add is if you're in an area that might have bears on the roof or roaming around, then you do want to stop. You don't want to be enticing the bears to your yard. But aside from that, no reason to stop feeding birds during the summer months. It's more popular during the winter.
Yeah, I appreciate that. As far as bears go, I spent a lot of time in the North Country, and we kept them out of the feeders there by mixing cayenne pepper in with the bird seed.
Well, that is, and that also works for squirrels, from what I hear. And
The birds don't mind.
No, the birds don't mind at all.
Oh, they darn.
Yeah,
we successfully use that around the house to keep the squirrels out.
Good.
Terrific.
Well, if you say it works, I'll have to go by what you say because I just hate to have a curious bear come around and then become angry because you didn't
or
like
get
the
indigestion.
Menu.
I mean, that's the other thing.
Oh, yeah. If you have an unhappy bear, that's not friendly.
Good point. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. We go over to John in Albany. John, you're up.
Hello.
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 I had an owl in my backyard at 1:03 a.m. a couple nights ago, and I don't know what it was. I could hear it for about 20 minutes.
Okay, what did it sound like?
Woo, 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 woo. And he repeated that call every 15 to 25 seconds for a good 20 minutes.
Well, that's very good.
What was it, Rich?
Well, clearly that was a great horned owl. That was a great horned owl call.
Thank you.
Wow, very nice.
Yeah, and they're nesting now. The young actually should be hatched out. They start very early in the year, in the season.
Yeah.
So, great horned owls. And they are an urban bird. They'd be surprised how well they adapt
how
to
big
the
is
urban.
It?
The great horned owl is huge.
Yeah.
Oh, it's super powerful. And
I've seen one once.
Yeah.
But this is in North Albany, and how might I find it? Or can I stand out there at 1 a.m. and do the call again?
Yeah,
well, good luck with that, because I found that with great horned owls, they're usually not very responsive to human imitations of their call.
No, even good ones?
Even good ones.
Okay.
Yeah, even as good as John's.
All right, and so they're reclusive to some extent?
Well, they're very wary, and at being at night, it's dark. They're dark-colored, hard to see, but easy to hear if you have them in a neighborhood within hearing distance. And the young should be out soon, and you'll start hearing the young calling for food, and they have a totally different call. They have a sound that goes something like,
it's a sound I make at payday. funny enough.
And they go on all night long. They're always hungry. And by the way, cats are on the menu,
so this is a good time to keep the cats in for their own
cats
safety.
Cats indoors because owls seem to like them.
John, great call. Thank you very much. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Hello, Marcia in Germantown. You're up.
Hi. Just a quick comment about it. There's a couple of other callers, and then my question. Yes, keep the cats indoors because cats only have about a lifespan of about 5 to 7 years.
But they have nine of them.
Yeah, but
I'm only teasing. I'm sorry.
Okay, all right.
An outdoor cat only on average lives about 5 to 7 years old, as opposed to an indoor cat.
Okay.
On with my question.
Okay.
So I heard one of the other callers mention cayenne pepper. I haven't tried that. I've done various things with my bird feeders. I have it hanging underneath a big pine tree that's outside our window, so I can do a lot of bird watching. And I use black oil.
Sunflower seed.
Sunflower seed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I started out with I hate to use the name, but an Audubon-approved bird feeder. It has a cage. It has the center post, feeding system, clear tube, and a lot of posts. But it has a cage around it and a bell on top, but it's not a very large bell. Well, of course, yes. The squirrels got right into that, and they actually used the cage to, hang from to get into.
Mm-hmm.
So then I tried another bird feeder, which is you use a soda pop bottle. And although it only had two stems for the birds to sit on, it thwarted the squirrels for a while until they figured it out. Uh-huh. And the longest of the squirrels could actually shimmy down and stretch his body to get to the little feeding outlets on the very bottom.
Well, you know how those squirrels are. They're very industrious.
They're cunning.
Yeah, they are.
All
they're
right.
Very cunning. So then I decided that I would continue with the soda pop bottle because that seemed to work, but then I figured I'd give them an obstacle, so I put a large shield, the kind that you can put on a pole.
Yeah.
to prevent them from climbing up, but I put it on top. And that worked for the big squirrels until I found a very athletic little squirrel who, and I watched him do this and sit on that branch and sit and figure it out.
Wow.
And he jumped from the tree trunk to the bird feeder and was able to land up underneath the bell, and the bell was like right up against the bird feeder, but he was able to clear that little clearance of about 2 inches.
Well, come on, you got to hand it to that little guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, give him a break.
Sure, get him into a circus or something.
A for effort.
I know.
Terrific.
And then he chewed into, because there wasn't a cage, he chewed into the soda bottle. And then sitting in the bird feeder.
He was just taking care of his friends.
Having a good time dining out.
Yeah.
Well,
so any suggestions? Have you found a bird feeder or a setup that works?
Okay. That's a fair question.
Fair,
it's a long
question.
Setup,
and
but a fair question.
And the answer is no.
No?
No. Actually, there are a couple where they have little trap doors where the treadle will exclude anything, any bird or squirrel from gaining access to the bird seed. So, you know, their weight will close the door, the access to the seed. But surprisingly, not. The squirrels have figured a way around that,
too. It sounds to me like if somebody could come up with this, they would make a fortune. Because every show,
yes,
there is this problem.
And yet there's an army of squirrels out there. For every method that we have to thwart them, they go back to the drawing room and figure out a way to get around it.
It seems to me more great horned owls would solve this problem.
You know, you're right there. Red-tailed hawks.
Thank you very much, Marcia. We appreciate the call. Johanna in Stantonville, you're on.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just heard the bear conversation, but I wanted to ask if there's anything you can put out for birds that the bear will not go for.
Ah.
Well, hummingbird feeders. Well, actually, they'll go for that, too, if they can. What I would recommend is putting a bird feeder out of reach of the bears, suspending it on a clothesline, let's say, or a pulley system to a large branch on a tree where you can raise and lower the feeder to get around that situation. Someplace where the bears won't be able to stand up and tear down a ground-accessible feeder.
Would they go up the tree to get the wire?
Well, they might, but if it's a wire is far enough away, then there is that one humorous video out there of a bear actually shimmying along a clothesline bird feeder.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But that's like the squirrel story. You know, sooner or later, one of them may figure it out. But the bears aren't as smart as squirrels, and nor are they as agile.
Really? Now, the bear people are going to be upset. They're going to call up and say, Rich, how could you say that?
I can. I can say that.
They're pretty smart.
Yeah, they're smart, but they're like, they're kind of big and awkward. And anyway, I would try something like that. No, and I don't have, other than that cayenne pepper suggestion.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, kind of risky. If it doesn't work, you got a problem.
Well,
yeah, big problem. We've had 2 bird feeders go down with the bear. It hasn't been here in 3 years, and this year it came back with a vengeance.
Yeah.
And so I'll have to try to find a way to string something up so I can actually see the birds while they're eating.
Well, hopefully you call us back on a future show this spring or summer and let us know how you did.
Okay, I will. Great suggestion. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Johanna.
And
we appreciate it.
Have fun with the experimenting. That's half of it.
Angie in Niskayuna. Angie, you're up.
Hi, it's Andy. Hi, Rich.
Hi, hi.
Oh, it's Andy Bergstrom.
Oh, hi, Andy. Good to hear from you.
Oh, Andy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I have a red wing imitation for you.
Oh, go
oh,
for it.
Oh, great.
I hear the flocks of red wings heading our way now. Be careful with that.
Was that good, Rich?
Yeah, that's really honest.
Okay, be brutally honest.
I am.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's hear it one more time, Andy. I like it.
Okay.
Anyway.
Yes.
That wasn't my question, but that's it. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
What is the status of barn owls around here? I saw online a really nifty way to make a barn owl house that goes into the barn but doesn't let the birds actually into the whole part of your barn. And I'm just wondering if there are enough around here to even try. I've never seen one myself.
Well, they used to be around here, and they may still be. However, the thing about barn owls, and this is the owl with the, you know, the house horse owl.
The what now?
The house for horses.
Okay.
As opposed to the barred owl, which is the one that hangs around literary circles.
I see. Yes. I see. Okay. Okay. Well, it is getting late in the show.
Yes, it is.
You know what? I'm going to leave now. You turn the lights off when you're done.
Okay. The barn owl used to be in this area in very low numbers. And they may still be around. They're strictly nocturnal and rather elusive and difficult to see. They're very quiet, but they do like barns. They do like church belfries. They do like water towers. Getting a box up for them, there is one at Five Rivers Environmental Education Center on the outside of a barn, and I don't think that has been successful at all in the history that it's been there. American kestrels might like it instead, but... Now, as far as... Go ahead.
I'm way out in Herkimer County now, so...
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, I wouldn't... I would say go for it. Try it and see what happens, because... But I don't think there are any barn owls left in the area. I'll be happy to be proven wrong.
Please let us know on a future program how this turned out, okay?
All right, I will.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Michael in Stafford, Connecticut. Michael, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Rick, my question is kind of the opposite spectrum here. I have a pack, gaggle, I don't know what you call it, of wild turkeys that come into my yard every morning. I see them roosting up in the trees every evening, and they scratch and dig and make an absolute mess of my lawn. How can I get rid of these wild turkeys short of a shotgun?
We don't want to do that. Please don't tell us.
At least not out of season anyway. Do you have a dog?
I do not.
Oh, okay.
Three cats.
Oh, well, no, keep them indoors. Turkeys are, once they learn to love you, they'll be back. They have a good memory. I would suggest, the best I can offer is that you personally go out there and discourage them. They also are quite wary for the most part. So, I would try to drive them off personally if I were you. And you know, discourage their night roosting. If they come to your place to roost during the night or feed in the late evening, they have a roost site nearby.
How would you discourage them? Insult them?
Well, yes. Just, you know, tell turkey jokes.
All right.
Very loud and in person.
No, how would you discourage them?
Just by going out there. They are very wary. They are easily spooked. And
I walk out there, clap my hands, and bang a tin can, and, you know, they'll go 10 feet away and then start scraping. It's amazing. They're not afraid of anything, really.
Well, you have a flock of turkeys that have become accustomed to you being there. So I actually don't have a good suggestion for you, Mike. We'll take this as a homework assignment.
Okay.
You know, just like on the science form, we'll do that.
You know what? I'll do some research on wild turkey right after the show.
Oh, yeah, right.
Michael,
right.
Thanks a lot. Let's go to Florence and Rhinebeck. Florence, you're on.
Yes. Hi. I have a question. I have three bluebirds in my.
Hey, Florence, bad connection. Try it one more time. I don't know if you're on a cell phone, but maybe stand on a chair or something safely. You said you had bluebirds?
I have bluebird boxes in my backyard.
Okay.
And for the last 3 years, I've had bluebirds nesting in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But over the last winter, sparrows took over the nest. And now they're fighting the bluebirds for the nest. And I was wondering if there's any way to get rid of the sparrows.
Well, if they haven't put their eggs down yet, or, you know, then you can, assuming these are house sparrows, which would be the likely candidate for that, you can open up the nest box and clean out the nest before they start producing eggs in there. And then there are certain attachments that you could put on the hole of a bluebird nest box if the sparrows are a problem. Also, check with the Waterman Bird Club, the Waterman Bird Club people. They have bluebird information available.
Good thing the show's over. You need a lozenge? We're almost done here.
Okay, that's Waterman Bluebird?
Waterman Bird Club, the Ralph T. Waterman Bird Club in Dutchess County, New York. And if you do a Google search on that, you'll find them, and they'll be very helpful.
Florence, thank you very much. And I guess, Rich, this is going to be the end of the show. I'm sorry about that, but you've obviously lost your voice, and so it's a perfect time to wrap things up.
But I haven't run out of things to say, Ray.
Well, we've run out of time, old
okay,
boy.
What
is your email address one more time?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
All right, fun show today, Rich. Thanks for being here. Support comes from Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services at a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, BoydenandPerrin.com. Edward Garbosik, certified financial planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement, HavocandWealthStrategies.com. And Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring Palm Sunday Flower Show with Easter Lilies, open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 4:30 and 9 to 4 Sunday starting this week, a gardener's destination, StoriesNursery.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy for doing a very competent job today, Zach. We appreciate it. Anonymous Sandy answered your calls. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie and for everybody just doing a great job on the calls. You know what? Tomorrow it's Food Friday. It's pizza. Ah, it's pizza.
Pizza.
Oh.